This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley, and here with me in the studio is Eric Jackson, host of Eric in the Evening here on 89.7, and the Dean of Boston Jazz. Eric, great to have you back in Studio 3.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is a little bit of a radio remembrance for Dave Brubeck, who died at 91 earlier this week, one day short of his 92nd birthday.
That's incredible. Incredible.
So for those who don't know why he was just so honored and respected in the jazz world, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one thing I would say, first of all, I'll tell a little story which may be indicative of one reason why he was so popular. When I was about 9 or 10 years old, my brother, oldest brother, had a job working on jukeboxes. He used to do minor repairs on jukeboxes, but he also used to put the 45s into the jukeboxes. And he would come home with 45s that were no longer current, or he would come home with duplicate 45s. And I would made it a habit to just look through the pile of 45s that he would bring home. And one day, I was looking through the pile, and I saw this red record. Now, I'm 9 or 10 years old, so remember, children's records
right.
were in color.
Yeah.
But I saw this red record, and that caught my eye. And I pulled that one out and listened to it. And it happened to be Take 5, and on the other side was Blue Rondo a la Turk by
wow.
Dave Brubeck.
Wow.
And that was how I was introduced to Dave Brubeck. And the thing I've heard from a number of people throughout the years, actually, but certainly in the last few days, is that Dave Brubeck was the one who introduced them to jazz. He was the one that got them into jazz. So there was something about the way Brubeck played the music that was that made it easy for people to catch on to, latch on to, and say, wow, this is jazz? Oh, I like this kind of stuff. And I think that is very important to the health of the music, actually.
One of the things that he did, he caught your eye as a young kid, but he really promoted jazz on college campuses. So that also allowed younger generations to hear it, you know, live with someone who was a master at this and become to love it, to love that kind of music.
I think in the early 50s, he began a program playing on college campuses. And I think that, again, spread jazz to a new generation. When he was able to go on college campuses, they could hear his music and they could see him. And I think many began an appreciation for jazz. And at that time, of course, he was a relatively young guy. And so they were able to see, oh, this jazz, this is not just old people's music. There are young people that can play this music. And they found his music interesting to hear. I think also one of the keys to his popularity, too, was that he was classically trained. In the 1940s, he studied at Mills College in California and studied with a classical composer by the name of Darius Milhaud. And Darius was also himself was very interested in jazz. And I think that sort of was a love relationship between the two of them mm-hmm. musically. And that, I think, is that kind of classical feeling was always in Dave's music. And again, I think that's what opened the door for so many other people, too.
Well, he's known. He has won every kind of award. He was the second musician to be on the cover of Time magazine. He's mm-hmm. known for signature kind of timing. Normal timing, normal, quote unquote, or standard of timing is 4-4.
Right.
On his classic Take 5, he did 5-4. And on
right.
other compositions, he did 7-8 and other kinds of combinations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I want to play track 7, if I might, called Marion McPartlin. And here, you're going to explain on the other side after we hear it, Eric, why this timing is different.
Thank you.
want to point out that this track and all the rest that we'll listen today are from a Dave Brubeck Quartet concert performed at Sanders Theater in 1999, which was recorded by WGBH's Antonio Oliart, also behind the controls today, and produced by Steve Schwartz, who did jazz programming here as well. This piece is called Marion McPartlin. Who is she, Eric?
Marion McPartlin is another senior citizen of the jazz world. She must be in her 90s at this point now. And this was a tune that he dedicated to her. And in fact, what he's playing right there at the opening is her name, Marion McPartlin.
Oh.
He's playing her name right there at the beginning of the tune. As you mentioned, most music from the African American tradition, as a matter of fact, was in 4/4 time, 1/2/3/4, 1/2/3/4, or 1/2/1/2/1/2. But what Dave started doing was using different time. So he might have his music and go 1/2/3/1/2, 1/2/3/1/2, 1/2/3/1/2. So it put a different feeling to the music when he would play in these what they call odd meters, because they were odd for most Western music to be using. But it basically meant they were counting the music in a different way, and they would also put the accent on the music in a different way. Each measure has an accent, and when they would play this in 1/2/3/1/2, the accents would be thrown into a different position too.
And that was distinct to him.
Right, yes.
Something that I don't think a lot of people know that I've come to learn is that Dave Brubeck, as part of his career and life, was really very much pushing the boundaries in terms of racial relations in this country. He had a black bassist that was a part of his troupe when there were no integrated groups. But more to the point, he was struck by the inequity of race that presented in the United States and was always affected. I want to play this clip where you'll hear him speaking. This is from Ken Burns's documentary Jazz, and this is Dave Brubeck talking about race.
You know, the first black man that I saw, my dad took me to see on the Sacramento River in California. And he said to his friend, "Open your shirt for Dave. There. There was a brand on his chest. And my dad said, these things can't happen. That's why I fought for what I fought for."
That's very powerful, Eric Jackson. And I should note, and you know this as well, he lost a lot of money because he refused to play in places that would not allow his whole band to play.
He also... First of all, the bass player you mentioned, Eugene Wright, was not the first black player in his band. He had had black musicians in his band several years before, maybe as much as many as 5 years before Eugene Wright was in the band. But yes, there were places in the South he refused to let them play because they say, well, if you want to come and play here, you should get a white bass player in order to play this gig. He also had an offer to appear on a very popular television show, the Bell Telephone Hour. And they said they were going to film the group but not show Eugene Wright. They would film it in such a way so that they could hear Eugene but not see Eugene. And Dave Brubeck turned down the appearance on, like I said, a very popular TV show because he didn't approve of that idea, excuse me, of them not wanting to film Eugene Wright. He was part of the group, you know.
In so many ways, he was extraordinary. At this 1999 quartet concert that was recorded by GBH's Antonio Oliart, who is too shy to tell this story, so I will. That night when he was performing, he had a a huge headache, and there was some concern that he might not be able to continue to the second part because there was a spotlight shining on him. And then he seemed to just embrace the moment, as most musicians do, to elevate himself to the point of performing for the crowd and demonstrating his music. And here was this piece that he just went to a different place. He started off with Somewhere Over the Rainbow and transitioned to Take Five. Here it is. As you can hear, that brought the house down. It was a fabulous moment, Antonio says.
You know, I think, not that I put myself on the level of Dave Brubeck, but I've said that there have been nights when I've walked in and I've said, boy, I feel terrible tonight. But the music just has a kind of healing power. And, you know, I do the show, and then, of course, 5 minutes after I get off the air, I feel like, oh, my goodness, where is that truck that just hit me? But I think there's a kind of healing power in the music, and while you're dedicated to dealing with the music, you're able to find the strength to get through. And so perhaps that's the same thing that Dave was able to tap on that night. Antonio didn't tell us how he felt after the concert was over.
Well, I think that's what we can say about Dave Brubeck, a consummate professional, a leader in jazz, someone who has left his mark and a great legacy, and both as a man and as a musician. And I'm very excited about being able to share these few moments with you to talk about him.
Thank you.
We're going to let Broadway Bossa Nova, another Dave Brubeck composition, take us into the afternoon. And we've been talking about jazz musician Dave Brubeck. He died earlier this week. He was 91 years old, one day short of his 92nd birthday. I've been joined by the Dean of Boston Jazz, Eric Jackson, the host of Eric in the Evening, here on 89.7 WGBH. And Eric, always great to talk to you. You've been listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. The conversation never ends online at WGBHnews.org. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH. I'm Callie Crossley. Have a great afternoon and weekend.